Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the SAF-HOLLAND conference call regarding the Q2 results of 2018. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Stefan Harff.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for attending today's conference call at the usual time slot, 10:30. Please be aware that the conference call today is basically a follow-up to the pre-release of sales and adjusted EBIT, which we did on July 16th, when we also adjusted the sales and adjusted EBIT guidance. Today, you will get a detailed view of the after-taxes figures of the balance sheet and the cash flow. With that, I would like to hand over to Mr. Burkhard.
Stefan, thanks a lot. Good morning also from my side. This is Detlef Burkhard, CEO of the company. Thanks for dialing in for today's call, and I would like not to use too much of your time. Therefore, I will jump into the agenda right next thing. On page number two, there's an overview about the topics we will talk about today. I will start with a business summary on three slides that will be followed by a guidance adjustment for the financial year 2018, which we already published approximately one month ago on July 16th. The following slides, number six, seven, and eight, will provide you a market update for the global truck and trailer industry, specifically on North America and Europe. This will be followed by some insights to regional trends, of course, with a clear focus on status and profitability in the Americas. After that, Matthias Heiden will guide you specifically through some financials. Finally, we will talk about the adjusted group targets in sales and earnings for the financial year 2018. With this, I would like to turn your attention on page number three of the presentation with the business summary first part, talking about the sales development mainly. On the first bullet point, you see that our sales growth in the second quarter 2018 grew by 15%, and we believe that is really important to mention. This is the highest Q2 number ever, with sales of 345.5 million euro. Previous year in the second quarter, we did a little bit more than 300 million. For us, on the sales side, really a record high. If you look to the organic sales growth, that came in with 11.7%, also a very nice number. The third bullet point, talking about the current market environment in the U.S., which is marked by continued soaring customer demand, and I would say a difficult industry supply chain. On top, the parallel ramp-up of our new production network and the necessary realignment of our five remaining plants in the U.S. led to slower than original expected reduction of additional operating expenses. On top, this is the last bullet point on this page here, we see a continuation on burdening effects and risks from still rising steel prices in the U.S. We believe it's worthwhile to mention at that point of time that we normally can do price pass-ons in most instances, but with a delay of approximately 6 months, which we did now in the second half of this year, with this steel price increase or steel price adjustment for the customers in North America. Of course, the steel price increase doesn't help at all in our overall situation in North America. With this, I would like to turn your attention on page number four, talking mainly about the profitability. First bullet point, in the second quarter 2018, our adjusted EBIT came in at 23.8 million euro. Previous year was 26 million, and it was down by 10.9%. And we believe that is important to realize, it came in sequentially higher than Q1 2018, which was 20.3 million. The adjusted EBIT margin came in at 6.9%. Previous year was 8.9%, which is, of course, lower than anticipated. As mentioned already on the previous slide, there are two main reasons for this 6.9% only. First reason, higher operating cost in the U.S. and, as I mentioned, the sharp steel price increase. Bullet point number four, and there is we can report a noticeable improvement in our net finance costs to 2.4 million. Last year was 3.9. And last but not least, the earning before tax increased by 3% to 17.2 million, comparable to 16.7 last year. The guidance adjustment, that is the headline on page number five. As I said, we already announced it on July 16th, and I'm going to repeat this, what we announced there in July. So based on the Q2 numbers 2018 and the expected further developments for the rest of the year, we adjust our sales and earning targets for the full business year 2018. First, that's the second bullet point here, considering our group adjusted EBIT margin, previously we said it will come in this year between 8 and 8.5%. We adjusted that now in a range from 7 to 8%. And second, regarding the sales, the revenue trend, we previously said organic sales will increase between 4 to 5%, and due to the upbeat markets and the underlying structural growth, which we can see now in the first 6 months, we are able to increase this forecast, these organic sales increase to 5 to 7%. On the next three slides, I will talk about the truck and trailer market development, especially in North America and Europe. Regarding the other markets, I will talk later on when we come to the regions. So on page number six, you see the trailer market in North America. And as you can see on the headline, there's a sustained strong order intake and the backlog reached up to 6 months. And as you can see, we have seen in the North American trailer market an extremely strong first quarter, followed by another strong second quarter. And in total, that means for the first half of this year, the trailer net orders, and this is not the production, these are the net orders, increased by 20.3%. And I would say, with other words, 2018 is done. That means all our customers, the trailer OEMs, are fully loaded with orders and already now confirming shipments for the first quarter, some of them second quarter next year already. So this is very healthy, and also for the remainder of the year, we expect no big change in that. So overall, 2018 will be a good, I would say, very good trailer year in North America. Even better and even more bullish, that's on the next page, number seven, you see the development of the truck market in North America. We are talking about Class 8 net orders only. This is the main market where we are in. Yeah, as you can see, the orange pillars there, they show an extreme trend. And to summarize this, the first 6 months this year in Class 8 increased by 96%. Again, these are net orders. I can't remember when we have seen something like that. 96% increase is really extreme. So this is great on one hand, for sure, and we always talk about a luxury problem to have, but, and this is the problem here, the whole supply chain, almost nobody in the North American commercial vehicle markets, especially on the truck side, is able to fulfill this demand short-term, given the existing capacities. So we see shortages everywhere, and plus the soaring steel prices that create, I would say, a really challenging environment for everybody in this market. But the good news is the order intake continues to be strong, and also for 2018, we can say this year is done on the truck side. And the truck OEMs, the big ones in North America already, as I said, in the trailer market, are now confirming the first and second quarter next year for deliveries. The last page on the market development, North America and Europe, is page number 8. Here you can see the new registrations. This is not order intake anymore. These are registrations for heavy commercial vehicles. That means above 16 tons in Europe. And we can see, or as you can see, the market increased by almost 4%. This is nice. This is really good. But I need to remind everybody, this is for us nice to see, important to see, but the commercial vehicle truck market in Europe counts only for roughly 3% of our total sales of the group. I will elaborate on the trailer markets in Europe, Turkey, Brazil, India, and China later on when we come to the regions in specific. On next page, page number 9, coming back to SAF Holland, here you can see the overview about sales development and our earnings. On the left-hand side, the sales, and as I said already in the opening of this today's call, in Q2 this year, we saw the highest number ever with 345.4 million euros in sales as a record quarter for us. On the right-hand side, you see the development of our adjusted EBIT in euros or a million euros. And with the 23.8 million or 6.9%, that is absolutely not the number where it should be. And this needs to improve for the rest of the year to 7 to 8% as we adjusted our guidance. And for next year, this needs to come back to the 8 to 9% level. But it's good to see that on the absolute figures coming from Q4 last year with 18.5 million, Q1 with 20.3, and now Q2 with 23.8, this trend goes absolutely in the right direction because it goes north. On page number 10, we show the group sales by channel and by region and the development in the second quarter. On the left-hand side, you can see a very strong OE business, which increases now to 76.9% of our total sales. Aftermarket is then the reminder of 23.1%. This should be 25%, but as we said, as we always say, if the OE business grows that much, then the aftermarket cannot grow on the same time. But all the sales we do in the OE business later on, in a couple of years, we will see also a nice development, increased development of our aftermarket business because we need to create population. On the right-hand side, you'll see the share by sales region. Europe now stands for 51.5%. Previous year was 53%. North America, or the Americas, sorry, is now with 35.6. Previous year it was almost 39, but this was burdened by FX effects. So because we show this in euro, the very nice increase you can see on the APEC China, which is light gray, this now stands for 12.9 or almost 13% of our sales, and that was previous year 8% only. And this is of course a very nice development to develop our market, our sales outside North America and Europe, which is part of our strategy 2020. Yeah, with this, I would like to hand over to Matthias to talk about the sales composition.
Yes, thank you, Detlef. Happy to do so. Gives you time to take a breather because I'll do a couple of slides in a row now. So let's start by looking at the very top of the P&L and the sales composition in the second quarter in particular. As stated, our top-line growth was 15%, all the way to 345.4 million, which includes the contributions from Orlandi and York, our two acquisitions that we consolidated for the first time. Their total contribution is 21.1 million. While we do not intend to publish this on a regular basis, meaning to break it out, I think it is helpful for the community and the audience to at least get started and develop an understanding of the performance of these two businesses. So to break these 21.1 million out a little bit, Orlandi contributes 7.3 million for 3 months with a mid-teen margin, and York 13.8 million euro for 2 months with a lower single-digit margin, which sits below group average at this point in time. If we move through the slide, meaning we move to the left, we see that the translational FX effects were still negative with 11.1 million in the second quarter or 3.7%. The remaining 35.1 million in the bridge represent our strong organic growth of 11.7% for the quarter. Moving on to the next slide, we answer the question what the sales picture looks like across the regions. Well, the overall message continues to be that the positive trend in organic sales growth continued in all regions, with EMEA continuing above 5% at 5.2%, the Americas continuing to grow strong on the top line at 15.1%, and APAC China at 38.3%, i.e. still strong, despite already very solid prior year comparables. Now, I promised Detlef a short breather, but now we need to come back to a deep dive on the regions, and Detlef will start with the Americas before I chime in again.
Yeah, thanks, Matthias. This is one slide only now, because Matthias will talk about the financial development in the Americas more in detail. But to give you an overview, which I always do, starting with Americas, you see that the sales, the organic sales growth by 15.1%, as Matthias just said. There was a negative exchange rate effect of minus 9.8%. So, but if we see the development versus Q1 2018, our sales grew by 21.1 million euros, which is a really nice development. On the EBIT side, Q2 2018 came in with positive 700,000 euros. Previous year, that was 7.3 million. This is, of course, not where it should be. But before I come to the following four bullet points, which will give you the, let's say, a brief overview of the main reasons for this unsatisfying development, I would say Matthias will do this in the next following slides, very transparent, to explain you more in detail where it comes from and what to expect on the EBIT development in North America. Matthias, please.
Of course, because as in previous quarters, we would now like to provide additional insights into those burdening effects, here shown, of course, at the example of Q2, and to show the progress we're making and where we stand in the region. Overall, the additional operating costs have come down to 2.3 million. This compares to 3.9 million euro from the first quarter. What do they consist of, these additional operating expenses of 2.3 million? Well, they consist of customer debits. Sometimes we refer to them as compensation payments, which is for a charge that we incur for late delivery. And sometimes that coincides with expenses for freight. But we also still have some plant efficiencies caused by the realignment of our production network. Allow me to add that all of this still happens against the background of an increasingly disrupted supply chain across the industry. Additionally, as you can see on the slide, steel price-related upfront material expenses had an overall negative impact of 4.3 million in the quarter. This number compares to 2 million euro in the first quarter. This also explains why our improvements did not fully drop through to the bottom line. Yet, if you allow me to, and if we were to eliminate both effects for the sake of the argument, one can see that the US improvement is there from a pure operating perspective. This we can also see on the next slide, where we look at the margin development across quarters. And while the overall cost situation as described resulting from the realignment and the ramp-up of our production network certainly continues to be unsatisfying, but with measures ongoing, this slide shows the successive improvements since our low point in Q4 2017 with a return to positive profitability in the second quarter of this year. I will now pass it back to Detlef, who will discuss the European performance in more detail, and at the same time will also address some of the more topical questions arising from recent news flow.
Yeah, thanks, Matthias. So the next two slides, first one is EMEA, the next one is in China APEC, I would say are my favorite slides today, because we can see very nice development in both regions, both in terms of sales and in profitability. Let's start with EMEA first on page number 16. In Q2 2018, our sales grew by 11.5% to 177.9 million, which is a nice increase. The organic sales grew by 5.2%, which we believe is higher than the market. Why is that? We see that's the second bullet point. We see a very good macroeconomic environment in Europe, all over Europe, including Eastern Europe and also Middle East, is not that bad. It is still on a low level, but it's not decreasing anymore. And also we believe we still gain some market share, especially on the trailer axle side. The company Orlandi, our latest acquisition in Italy, contributed from April 2018 on, as Matthias already said. And this is important to notice, that the aftermarket business was part of this very nice sales growth in the second quarter. We saw a 4% increase on an already high basis. So, and with these, as we said, the high output of number of axles in these days, we also believe that our aftermarket business in the upcoming years will definitely profit from that development. Yeah, even better is the EBIT development, as you can see on the further left. Down the second quarter this year came in with 20.4 million euros, or respectively with 11.5%. So the adjusted EBIT rose by almost 18% in the second quarter this year. This is supported by positive mix effects. So very nice customer and product mix. As I said, aftermarket is part of that. And I would like to point out that operational leverage, for example, we definitely see now all the positive outcomes out of the plant consolidation we did in 2015 here in Europe, closing one plant and investing in the remaining two ones. So, and we can see now these two factories are fully loaded with orders, and we have a very high efficiency here. Plus, our factory in Turkey is part of this very nice development, and I would like to elaborate a little bit more on Turkey right now, because last Friday we sent out an investor information about our exposure on the Turkish and neighboring markets. I'm not going too into the details here, but I would like to make three points at that point of time here. First of all, our exposure in terms of sales to Turkey and the adjacent markets is below 2% of total group level, total group sales. Sorry. Secondly, we are very pleased with the performance of our operations in Turkey, in Düce, which is right between Istanbul and Ankara. So, and the factory is already running on a two shift, partly on a three shift mode, earlier than we expected, and we do a lot of products there, a lot of trailer axles and suspensions, mainly for customers in Western and Southern Europe. And the third point is that if you see the development of the Turkish lira right now, our plant in Turkey was always considered as a low-cost site or low-labor cost site, and that will be even lower if the exchange rate will remain on this level now. We see at that point of time not any export restrictions out of the Turkish country or out of Turkey. I don't know why this should happen, as somebody argued last Friday. So overall, the factory in Turkey is, as I said, full loaded with orders, and we believe that will continue also in the next couple of weeks, months, and years. Talking about the other markets in Europe, Russia, just for a second, also here we see a very nice development. Russia is strongly coming back, And that helps also because our market share in Russia is high, both in the OE and aftermarket. So that helps. And we see overall in Europe a very stable trend. We see so far any weaknesses in order intake for customers, both on the truck and trailer side. And we believe that the IAA this year, which is to come in end of September, so in a couple of weeks, we believe this trend will continue. Yeah, Europe, as I said, very good picture overall in terms of sales, in terms of EBIT, and in terms of outlook. The same is on the next page, page 17, talking about APAC China. And as you can see in the headline here, we achieved our highest percentage sales growth within the group in the second quarter this year. As you can see on the left-hand side, our sales grow from 23.9 million last year in the second quarter to 44.5, which is an increase of 86%. This is, of course, part of that is the York acquisition, which contributed with approximately 40 million in the second quarter. On organic base growths, our sales grew by 38.3%. We have no change in the high demand, especially in China, for products which are safer, lighter, and more reliable than in the past in China. It has to do with some new regulations from the authorities in China limiting loads and dimensions, and also for stricter safety regulations, which absolutely plays in our hand, because that means air disc brake, air suspensions, live product, etc., all the areas where we are very strong in North America and in Europe, and we can use these benefits also for the development, our development in China. On the profitability side, you can see that the adjusted EBIT in the region increased to 2.7 million. Previous year it was 2.1. This is a little bit lower in percentage-wise than last year, but this is as expected due to the York inclusion, and as Matthias already said, their adjusted EBIT right now is below group level, but we are working on to increase that and to lift that to our normal group level profitability. And of course, and we mentioned that on the last bullet point here, the sales, especially in China, is almost without any aftermarket business, which is to come in the following years. Just a few words to the Indian trailer market, because now India is part of our global footprint. I believe it's important to mention that India so far, or in these days, is the fastest growing trailer market globally. We see a year-over-year growth by 8 to 9% on the trailer market in India, and this will continue according to our know-how also in the upcoming years. And now, with the acquisition of York, we are the market leader in India for trailer axle and suspensions, and of course, with this nice development, we will participate on that. Just a few words about Brazil before we come to the financials more in detail. The Brazilian market is much better than last year, not that strong as we thought, but on the truck sales side, in the first half of the year, we saw an increase on registrations by almost 49%, but once again, coming from a very low level. And also on the trailer side, the latest reports show an increase by almost 80% on registrations on all type of trailers and semi-trailers. But also here, as I just mentioned, coming from an extremely low level in 2017. Yeah, with this, I'm done with the overview of the business performance in the different regions, and I would like to hand back to Matthias to guide us through the financials more in detail.
Yes, I shall do so, and I will now take you further down the P&L before moving over to the balance sheet, and then, of course, some cash debt-related items to close with. Let's start with the gross profit view in Q2. The gross profit came in at 54 million euro, slightly below the previous year, yet with a lower gross margin of 15.6%, which compares to 18.3% 6% in the previous year. This is due to all the factors we already discussed as they come together in the gross profit prior to some of the adjustments that we usually make, namely the additional operating expenses of 2.3 million, which I discussed, as well as the steel price upfront cost of 4.3 million, which I also mentioned, and on top of that, restructuring cost of 0.4 million impacted gross profit, only 0.2 of which come from the U.S. If we look at the reconciliation of the reported EBIT to adjusted EBIT in the second quarter, we have the following picture. Excluding restructuring and transaction costs totaling 1.6 million and PPA of 2.6 million, the adjusted EBIT amounted to 23.8 million compared to reported EBIT of 19.6 million. I would like to comment, because you see the jump in the PPA number from 1.2 in the previous year to 2.6. I believe it's important to analyze this and shed some additional light on that. The major impact in creating this increase comes from the York acquisition, where we've had an inventory step up to be accounted for. At this point, we see the PPA continuing at Q2 level for the remainder of the year. In 2019, this number should start to regress to about 2 million euro at some form of a PPA run rate, if you like, again. Moving to the next slide, where we look at EBIT and net income. Here, based on something that Detlef already included in his business summary, i.e. the significantly improved finance result, the group's result before taxes in the second quarter increased by 3% and amounted to 17.2 million euro compared to 16.7 million in the previous year. At 30.4%, comparing to 29.7 last year, our income tax rate was almost at the previous year's level, as the group has so far been unable to benefit from the reduced corporate tax rate in the U.S., which is due to our still insufficient earnings situation in the Americas. The result for Q2 increased by 1.7% to 12 million, which is the net income figure shown on the very right. If we break that further down to the EPS level, and if we base our calculations on 45.4 million shares outstanding, we can see that the basic EPS amounted to 26 euro cents and the adjusted basic earnings per share to 35 euro cents, both numbers unchanged to their comparables from the previous year. Moving on to the balance sheet side of the financial discussion, which is page 22, we need to look at inventories and net working capital. Here we see a strong increase in inventories due to our strong organic sales growth and a deliberate step up in the U.S. due to soaring steel prices and the distressed supply chain. The number increased to 194.4 million at the end of Q2. If we compare this to year end, that is a jump from 133.7 million to these 194 million we're showing now. Also, a deliberate higher inventory level in China as the region ramps up. An additional comment maybe at this point on the U.S. situation and the distressed supply chain. We made a conscious decision, for lack of a better expression, to get our hands on the material, get it into the plants, to be ready to execute, to avoid incurring additional charges on getting out the door late. We're not alone in this game, as Detlef also described earlier, but this is, of course, reflected in higher inventory levels. What is important, though, is if you do your analysis on an inside-the-quarter basis, meaning you look at the difference between the end of Q1 inventory level, 151.8 million, you add 42.6 million, which is the change inside the quarter, to take you to the 194.4. I would like to point out that acquisitions contribute 19.5 million to this increase alone. Part of the equation is also, this is the third bullet point in the explanations, are the elevated steel price, because some of the things we have in inventory contain steel components or steel elements. They have become slightly more expensive, and so this also contributes to the number. As a result, not surprising given the high level of inventory at this point, the DOI, the days of inventory outstanding, came in at 60 days, which is significantly higher compared to the end of the second quarter, 2017, where we stood at 51 days. If we transfer inventories into net working capital, we also see a relatively strong increase in net working capital, which now amounted to 204.4 million in absolute terms, up 43.1% on Q2 2017. And our net working capital ratio stands at 14.8%, not only higher than the previous year, but also off target, if you don't mind me saying so, at this point in time. What are some of the reasons and some of the explanations at this point? Well, again, our strong organic sales increase plus the pickup in net working capital are driven by higher inventories, as I just described, and a slower rise in trade payables, which only increased by 1.6 million versus 14.8 million in the second quarter of 2017. Why? Well, some entities managed the usual routine to pay relatively late, i.e. after quarter end closing well, while we had some others inside SAF Holland Group that paid a little bit too quickly. Here, we can optimize ourselves, or rather return to our usual normal, because the group normally knows the routine. Yet, allow me to also point out that we do leverage early payment discounts wherever we can to make a contribution to the bottom line of the company. Acquisitions do not play a role in this equation on net working capital. We need to be fully transparent here, as the related increase in receivables is largely offset by payables. Further to be considered in the discussion is a negative regional mix effect with regard to receivables, because at this point we see particularly strong growth in parts of the world that come with longer payment terms, not because we decide to give unusually long payment terms, but just because it is part of the business culture in those territories. While these were the reasons to describe the current situation, we're still working towards our 12% target, and half year two should see the typical positive seasonal pattern, especially in Q4, and this, of course, ties in with my next slide on operating cash flow, which is also a reflection of the developments or the status quo that I just discussed. Q2 operating free cash flow, which is defined as the net cash flow from operating activities, less investments in PPE and intangible assets prior to M&A activities, came in at minus 16.6 million in 2018. The previous year comparable stood at 7.5 million euro positive. This is, as I just said, caused by the increase in net working capital, and here the same applies, because a reduction and a stronger focus on net working capital management will lead to an improvement and seasonal positive patterns in half year two, 2018. If we move from this picture to net debt and equity on the next slide, we see a strong increase in net debt if we compare June 30, the end of the second quarter, at 252 million to December 31, where we stood at 105.5 million. I shall elaborate on that in just a second on the next slide, where we offer a bridge. But I will finish this slide with the comment that I'm happy to see the equity ratio continuously above 30.4%. This is a level of equity that we're certainly comfortable with, and if you compare this to the situation that the company, for example, was in 10 years ago. This is a tremendous increase and, of course, a comfortable basis to manage from. Coming back to the higher net debt level, though, the significant change requires additional explanation. In doing so, on the next slide, we would like to offer you a bridge where we do explain the inside the quarter movements, which is why we start on the left-hand side with the end of March at 142.6 million, taking you through the bridge to the net debt level at the end of the second quarter to the very right. The first item is more a memo record, as one would say in SAP language, but it's just a reminder that we did repay our bond in April, which is obviously cash out and debt down. But you then see the different steps that take you to the increased level of net debt, namely the dividend payment at 20.4 million, cash out for M&A activities of 66.3, the negative operating free cash flow, which I just described two slides ago, of 16.6 million, and then a mixed bag or some other miscellaneous items of 6 million, which is the explanation why we stand at 252. As a finishing comment, before passing it back to Detlef, allow me to say that if you follow the process chain in the financial supply chain, it goes without saying that the improvements targeted for the second half of the year, together with the positive seasonal pattern that we usually see, should also lead to a reduction in net debt towards year-end, because we will generate a higher cash position towards the end of the year. And with that, I pass it back to Detlef, who will take it home now before we open for Q&A.
Matthias, thanks a lot. I'm on page 26 now with the, for the last slide for the today's presentation, with the new outlook for the financial year 2018. I start with the sales picture. As I said already earlier when I started this presentation, our organic increase, sales increase, we guided between 4 to 5% earlier this year. We changed that now and we increased that to 5 to 7%, assuming, of course, stable FX rates and unchanged scope of consolidation. Why is that? Just to repeat as a summary, all the markets where we are in are strong, except Turkey and some neighboring countries, which are pretty quiet, but all other markets are developing in the right direction. And due to our strong market position with our main product, we participate on this growth. So 5 to 7% is the new outlook for this year in terms of sales. Plus, the contribution of our two acquisitions, Orlandi and York. Also, we increased here our outlook. We said earlier it will be roughly 50 million plus. Now we see a positive trend in this direction as well, and they will contribute a minimum of 60 million euros this year as well. At that point of time, I would like to just to comment on these two acquisitions. We are very pleased with the ongoing post-merger integration process of both of Orlandi and York, and we see a very fast progress in bringing these two companies on the group level with various activities in various countries of this world. Then you see potential further M&A, and here I would like to point your attention very briefly on our latest acquisition, which we did a couple of weeks ago in July, with the UK-based company Accent, which will help us, or I would say, which boost our development in terms of digitalization, as we call it, smart steel or smart steel activities. The adjusted EBIT margin, which is in the second line, we previously said 8 to 8.5% as a corridor. We changed that guidance now from 7 to 8%. And the other two targets, net working capital and CapEx, are unchanged. Net working capital should be around 12% and CapEx somewhere around 38 to 40 million euros. And here to point out, this is higher than normally, as you can see in the strategy 2020, 26 to 28 million, so below 30 million. But this year we need to and would like to invest in China in a brand new factory, which we will build in the Yangzhou area right now, plus some high investments in digitalizations and IT. Yeah, last but not least, to confirm our targets for the Strategy 2020, absolutely unchanged. Organic sales growth up to 1.25 billion euros. M&A acquisitions, etc., should bring another 250 million, so in total 1.5 million euros at the end of 2020. The adjusted EBIT margin at least 8% or bigger, and net working capital 12%, around 12%, and CapEx, as I just said, below 30 million euros per annum. Yeah, with that, we are done with today's presentation, and I would like to hand back to Stefan.
So the floor is open for questions and answers now. Please go ahead with your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9* on your telephone keypad. In case you wish to cancel the questions, press 9* again. Please press 9* now to pose a question. Currently, there are no questions. I would like to repeat, if you want to pose a question, please press 9* now. So there seem to be no questions.
There's one.
Maybe we should wait for a few seconds.
There seems to be one question in the pipeline.
So Mr. Schmidt, Jan-Erik Schmidt, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I just have a quick question about the net working capital development. You basically said that it has increased due to receivables in the APEC region because they are usually higher than in the other regions. Can we assume that we won't come back to a lower level of about 12% due to the shift towards APEC revenues?
I can take that question, Mr. Schmidt. Thank you, first of all, for raising it again. Allow me to come back to the more comprehensive explanation that I gave, because the net working capital is obviously something that also contains some other factors than just trade receivables, because as I tried to explain, we have quite a little bit of working capital tied in inventories at the same time, which was a deliberate move in the U.S. and China, just to repeat that again.
Yeah, sure.
On the trade receivable side, which is more your question, I said that we would be working towards the 12% target. And if you look at the seasonal pattern, there is always a strong move towards the lower end, if you like, taking us down in net working capital, especially in Q4. I would not say that there is necessarily something happening inside SAF Holland Group that will completely change our net working capital pattern or the trade receivable pattern because we're growing in those territories. Yet we need to be mindful that they're there, which is why we're bringing them up, not as an excuse. To the contrary, I actually had a conversation with my board colleague Guo Xinmao from China yesterday. He also confirmed that even in territories like China, where payment terms are usually a little bit longer, working capital management is a topic of focus. It's a topic of focus and process. And that is why within a short period of time, organizations are able to make improvements because they refocus themselves. And sometimes, and that is what I tried to explain during the call, there is a focus on more operational or tactical issues, which is the inventory buildup. But then we also need to make sure, and that is part of my role, of course, that we return the focus to the core working capital management process, meaning the resulting receivables need to be collected. So hopefully that did answer your question, even though you asked me a short question and I gave you a somewhat long-winded answer, but I felt it necessary to elaborate a little bit.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks.
Thank you.
And there is another question come from Miro Suzak from JMS Invest. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my question. The first one is on China. We have seen now this very high organic growth rate since 12 months, basically. I understand this is also due to these regulatory changes. Now, can you give us an outlook for the coming years, like for 2019, 2020? Do you expect this to continue during the coming years, or do you think this might be a kind of a one-off effect now during 2018, which will be less significant in the coming years?
Yeah, Mr. Suzak, thanks for your question. I am going to answer that because I'm responsible for China and APEC as well as my hobby. That I'm a president of the region on top to my CEO position. And I spend significant amount of time in China. Yeah, the organic growth in China is due to the market change, as I said already, and as you also said, we see the regulatory change. And this is even more to come in the next years. I'm going to explain that a little bit more in detail. There is one new regulation which will come in place 1st of January 2019, when the government has a new law in place that all trucks and trailers, heavy trucks and trailers, transporting dangerous goods, that means benzene, kerosene, chemicals, all this dangerous stuff which is moved on the road, then all these vehicles needs to have air disc brake from January 2019 on. Today, and this is important to mention, I would say 95% or maybe even 98% of the Chinese trailers and also trucks, by the way, are running on drum brakes. Okay, so there will be a significant shift in towards this modern technology of running disc brakes, which is, by the way, here in Europe, more or less a standard. Roughly 70 to 80% of all trailers here in Europe running on disc brakes, and on the trucks and trailers transporting dangerous goods, this is 100% disc brakes. So this is one wave, or the first wave. The second wave is to come then 1st of January 2020, because there's another new regulation in place, which is already in place, which will come that from 1st of January 2020 on, all these trucks and trailers transporting dangerous goods need also to have air suspensions. And today, the same like a disc brake, all of trucks and trailers in China are running on mechanical suspensions, which is not available in Europe anymore, or almost not available. All trucks and trailers in Europe are running on air suspensions. So that means this is the second wave, and we as SAF Holland, with our existing product range, both in North America and also here in Europe, exactly on these two technologies, air disc brake in combination with air suspensions, we are the market leader or one of the market leaders. On air disc brakes, for example, we are number one globally. There's no other trailer axle manufacturer in the world who produces so many trailer axle disc brakes than we do. So that means the outlook for the coming years, we see absolutely positive. These tankers, these commercial vehicles who transport dangerous goods, we believe is roughly 15% of the Chinese, of the total Chinese market. And if you will raise the question, how big is the Chinese market? Nobody knows. In these days, we see roughly 500,000 trailers per year, which is the size of Europe and North America together. That will level down to probably 300,000 to 400,000 in the upcoming years. But it is still the biggest and will be the biggest truck and trailer market globally. And as I said, we will play a big role here. To be prepared for that, and then I'm done with my answer, is, as I said, we are already building a new factory, a brand new one, in the Yangtze area, which is in the Yangtze River Delta, close to Shanghai. This plant will be a 43,000 square meter plant, which is more than the size what we have here in Germany together with our two plants here. So it's a really enormous factory with brand new equipment. This will be the benchmark in the APEC region and China region in terms of operations, highly modernized with a lot of robots, etc. And we will build this factory, and this will start operation hopefully in 1 year from now to be ready to fulfill the demand which we will see, which will come in China. I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I would have another one, if I may.
Please.
It's regarding the seasonal pattern in your top line. Because if I go back in the history, I can see in the previous few years that typically Q4 has been almost every region the weakest quarter volume-wise. But it has not been the case all the time. So, for example, in 2017, Q4 was very strong in Europe. The same was the case in 2015. I see similar patterns in other regions, in other quarters, in other Q4 quarters. Now, given the extremely high order intake and the exceptionally strong year 2018, do you expect again a somewhat slower Q4 compared to Q3 and Q2? Or do you think this time the seasonal pattern would probably be a little bit less significant compared to other years?
Yeah, thanks for your second question. Yeah, there's a pretty high chance that Q4 will be not that weak. That is normally weaker because we have Christmas time both in North America and Europe, and yeah, these are the main reasons. Plus, we have some other days off in North America. So absolutely true. Q4 is normally a weaker quarter, but this year, as you said, order intake is high, the demand is high. We see that also in the last quarter this year. But we will stop production on Christmas. Okay, we will stop production in North America around. Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. So this is because our people will not work. So we have a weaker output than in these days. But overall, Q4 should be a good quarter, and we might leave the seasonal pattern this year again.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question comes from Nicolai Kempf from Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, it's Nicolai Kempf from Deutsche Bank. Thanks for taking my question. So I have a question on the U.S. You guided for incredible improvements on the supply chain, but you also mentioned that the market looks pretty good next year in terms of trucks and trailer. So what can we expect in terms of margins? Rather like 2017 or rather like 2016?
Yeah, the margins should come back to levels, as we said, should be at least 8%. I would definitely see something between 8 and 9, but we will see how fast we can develop, the plant alignment in North America. I believe, and that's the plan, that from Q1 next year we will not have any, let's say, extra cost on operations. We believe that the steel price increase we can pass on to our customers. Probably not 100%, but most of it. So overall, the margins in the North American region should come back to normal level. It's a little bit too early to say now, is it 8 or is it whatever, but this is definitely the plan coming above the 8% level.
Okay, thanks.
So there seem to be no more questions. Maybe we wait for a few seconds. If you want to pose a question, press 9 star. No, there are no more questions, and I would hand over back to spokesman.
So, thanks a lot for taking the time to attend today's conference call. If you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to contact the IR department, and wishing everybody a nice holiday who's living in Bavaria and Saarland, because we are having a holiday tomorrow. So, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.